There you go, the old Purcell Trumpet Concerto. This is Trending Now with Josh Arnold. I'm Rick Moore, along with Josh, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky, on this kind of a weird Friday with Jose just hanging several hundred miles offshore and making it a little dank and dreary, but compared to what the rest of the Western Hemisphere has gone through, we can't complain.
No, we can't.
We've seen much worse than this, so this is nothing, and... God, watching some of those stories. Oh, my word. Anyway, let's get back to local. What do we have lined up for this morning?
Well, this morning we have Mary Yusevich, who's a candidate for Ward 2 City Council in Salem, Mass. Our second guest is Jamie Figueroa, candidate for at-large City Council in Lynn. And our third guest is Bill Squillis, who's the former mayor of Gloucester, assistant state treasurer, and the finance director for the town of Newburyport. We're going to be talking about a wide range of political things, much of it's on the national level.
Okay, we'll be back.
Score early and often this fall with a low-rate residential loan from the Institution for Savings. The Institution for Savings has fantastic rates, low or no fees, great service, and prompt turnaround. Plus, we service our mortgages in-house, so help is always a local phone call away. For more information or to apply online 24/7, visit institutionforsavingsloans.com or call us at 978-462-2344. Institution for Savings, member FDIC and DIF, equal housing lender.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. If you're thinking of replacing the windows in your home, you should look at the Anderson Woodwright double-hung insert window, which comes with rich wood interiors in oak, pine, or maple. Quite simply, Anderson is the most trusted window in America. That's why we've been selling them for 57 years. Please see the Anderson Woodwright windows on display at any of our three locations in North Reading, Beverly, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
Welcome back to Trending Now with Josh Arnold. Our first guest is Mary Yusevich, who is a candidate for Ward 2 City Council in Salem. Mary, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Josh, so much for having me this morning.
Well, we usually start out and ask people to give us the 3 or 4 minute bio, and then we'll have some questions about your candidacy and the race that you're involved in.
Well, thank you. Yes, I appreciate this opportunity. I have been living in Salem for the past 35 years, and I raised two wonderful children named Stasha Motoria, who attended the Salem school system, and I've been married 33 years to a gentleman named Stan Yusevich, former mayor of Salem. And I have degrees. I have an MBA from Suffolk University and a BA from American University in Washington, D.C., and I've worked in government on the federal, state, and local level. I've worked for state agencies that oversaw the environmental cleanup of the Boston Harbor and protected our water supply. And I've enjoyed being in the public sector, but I did make a move into the private sector, where I then became a vice president of a major Fortune 500 company. So I've now stepped back and just have my own small PR firm, which gave me this opportunity now to run for this open seat here in Salem.
Great. So, looking at your time in Salem, tell us about some of your involvement in community work. Some of the things you've done or been involved in.
Well, thank you too again for that, because I have been an active volunteer in Salem. I started our wonderful 4th of July celebration, which is still going on to this day. That was about, I would say, over 15 years ago. When I started off, I made sure that no city money was spent on it, and we now enjoy one of the largest fireworks display with a full orchestra. It's fantastic. If you have never come, I strongly encourage people to come the 4th of July in Salem. And then we have the second oldest continuously operating city hall in America, but it looked that way too. So what I did is I raised donations, no city money, and beautified our gorgeous city hall with re-glazing of the eagle and putting gold leaf in the city name so you know it's the city hall building, and basically doing over all the floors, lamps, ceilings, and it's really a beautiful, beautiful building. And I encourage anyone to come and see it. And then I have worked as well as was on the YMCA board. We worked writing grants to get the restoration of the beautiful windows within Ames Hall. I have a daughter who goes to Rhode Island School of Design, and when she was young, I knew she was going to be an artist. So I worked with the Marketplace group to actually create the Artist Row in Salem, which now allows artists to show their artwork and basically get in, citizens of Salem and community people involved in art. So, and then it goes on, the list goes on. I've done tons of board, other board work, other community work, Women's Friends Society. So
good.
I don't want to bore the listeners with a million lists of things that I've been able to accomplish. And basically what people say is if you want something done, Mary Yusevich, you get things done.
Okay. Well, what is your motivation for running for office in Salem at this point in your life?
My love for the city. I have loved the city since the day I moved here 35 years ago. And I did so to marry someone who has the fourth generation of Salemites. So I understand the traditions and learning about them through my husband. And then also seeing when people do move here to Salem, what Salem has to offer.
Good.
It's a jewel, I'm telling you. We have everything. We have a fantastic, active downtown that I have to contribute a lot of it to my husband. And so we have these wonderful restaurants and movies and the Peabody Essex Museum. And he started the ferry into Boston, which has then been continued on with the current administration. So there's all ways and modes of transportation to get to Boston, but you don't have all of the other stuff that comes with Boston, like the crime and the, you know, basically the density and all. We basically have everything, and we're still a short trip away from Boston.
Great. What are the issues that seems to be an issue this year in Salem is the notion of it being a sanctuary city. And I only scratched the surface looking at some articles and some, you know, what people have posted online about it, but it's almost like a dichotomy. There's the hype of the issue and there's the issue itself. Where do you see that issue, and is it a substantive issue? Is it something that's riddled with misinformation, or explain to us what the issues are there and what your thoughts are on whether it should be or should not be a sanctuary city?
First of all, I want to make it very clear, I'm against hate. And I think that was the intent when the council and the mayor introduced this ordinance, was to make people realize that we do not tolerate hate. And that's, if you look at the history of Salem, that is one thing we learned way back in 1692, that hate is just not going to be accepted in our city. I think that the word ordinance, I think, concerns a lot of people. And the more I looked at this, it really isn't an ordinance. And it was basically a referendum. And unfortunately, it wasn't called that, so it caused a lot of misunderstanding. But I just want to be, so that's why I think it's good that it's going to be on the ballot, so everyone gets a chance to vote on this and make sure that their voice is heard. But I think that was basically where the confusion came about. But I want to be very clear, I'm opposed to hate, and I don't think it has any place in our society.
One of the issues with sanctuary cities is, I mean, this much of this has come forward because of the position on immigration with the incumbent president. And for years now, it has been the case that the federal government, let me step back from it. In Massachusetts, when they passed Proposition 2.5, they said there'll be no unfunded mandates by the state. They did manage to find ways around that a bit, but the federal government does not do that. They simply say, we compel you to do this, and if you don't do it, then we're going to pull out our federal funding. So for Salem, that would mean, you know, all kinds of money losses, community development block grant money, and any number of other programs that the feds put money into. I'm an advocate for children with special needs is one of the things that I do, and that's always been the leverage that we have when we're advocating for a child, is to say, you know, if you don't provide a free and appropriate education for this child, we have the right to file, and it, you know, it goes to distance, you know, the feds could come in and pull your federal funding. That's true of many different things, but for this point in time, the Trump administration has put this thing out there. If you're a sanctuary city and you don't follow what we want, we're going to pull your funding. And that's changed. That's made the complexion of this issue magnified. Do you agree with that?
Well, I want to explain. So the mayor's letter to the council, also co-authored by the city council, made it very clear that we will lose no federal funding based on this ordinance, which is really, it's a resolution. It has no teeth to it. So it's just a statement of fact that we're a city that's open to all citizens that reside here in the city of Salem. So that was clearly stated in the mayor's and the city councilor's letter. So we're not changing any laws. We're not going to instruct the police to do anything different than what they've been doing all along. And basically, the thing that I want to make sure that the citizens of Salem know and the voters of Salem know is that if someone commits a crime or a felony, they will then be asked their immigration status, just like they did under the Obama administration and just like they will be doing going forward. That's the time when they will ask about their nationality and their immigration status, is if they do something illegal and they do a crime. So that those people will not be allowed to stay in our city, and they shouldn't be allowed to stay in our city if they're a criminal. I don't want criminals to come to this country and continue to be a criminal and cause harm to our citizens. So that is why I think there's a misunderstanding. People feel that sanctuary city means that allow criminals to harbor here. That's not the case. And that's why I think the word ordinance should have been a referendum, because all we're doing is reaffirming our current policies and continuing them forward.
Tourism's a huge part of the Salem economy, yet tourism via what may make Salem the Halloween capital of the world does create some congestion and traffic issues as Halloween approaches. What are some of your thoughts on ways that tourism could be enhanced in Salem, and at the same time reducing impact issues that tourism can create?
So tourism is a great thing, because I think we are gradually shifting to that as our main business. And it's wonderful that we do have the Halloween known as the City of the Witches. But as any business, as you know, Josh, you need to diversify. You don't want to put all your eggs in one basket and be known as this just one industry only, unless it's diversified. And in tourism, we're fortunate that we could diversify. We are home to the Parker Brothers, and the Parker Brothers were the manufacturers of Monopoly and Clue. So not to be to do a pun, but I'd like to monopolize on that concept and really develop a museum. We're the only city in America that can say we are the home to Parker Brothers, makers of Monopoly. And board games are a wonderful educational tool, so highlighting how important they are into child development is something that could be part of the museum. The Hasbro company has the all the games intact, is my understanding. And so it's basically, we could encourage them to participate in this museum. And I think it would diversify not only the type of people that would come as a tourist, it would help us with the down months that we have in tourism in Salem. So we have this huge surge in the fall, and then we have dead come the winter. And so it's very hard for businesses to continue staying here in Salem if they have to carry 3 or 4 months. By having an indoor thing like a museum, coupled with the Peabody Essex Museum, we could really draw on a lot of people coming during those dead months, and people that are even different than the Peabody Essex Museum, maybe more family-oriented. So with him, with the Monopoly Museum, and with the Halloween stuff, plus the rich history we have of being a port city with the national park, we really give a reason for people to stay longer than one day. And that's the goal, because once they stay more than one day, they have breakfast, they have lunch, they go shopping, they go to plays, they use a hotel room. It really helps the city increase its revenue.
Good. What? We've got just a couple more minutes before we have to go to our next guest, but what is the impact social media has had on the election cycle and constituent services in terms of communicating what happens day-to-day business operations of the city? I know that the incumbent mayor, Kim Driscoll, and the Gloucester mayor, Safatia Romeo Taken, use social media and, you know, in ways that, you know, if there's a water main break, or if they're paving the road, or if they're rerouting traffic, or, you know, the pending snowstorm. That didn't happen when we were growing up. Al Gore hadn't invented the internet yet, and we, you know, so what do you, is it a plus, is it a minus? What do you think?
No, I think technology is always a plus. It's a wonderful thing, technology, because it is a great form of communication. I do want people to recognize the fact that we're in a transition period. There are still people that don't use the internet, and so that we have to kind of create a bridge to allow both forms of communication. That's why I keep on giving out my telephone number to people, because I want them to know you can still call me. I have a landline. It's listed, and I will still take calls and concerns from people. So technology as a way of communication is fantastic. I still think it's really important, though, to make that contact with the actual person, to get to know the person who is going to be representing them, and basically deal with their constituent services. I mean, the quality of your life really depends on local services. You know, trash not being picked up, that really does affect your day. Street lights taken out really makes you feel unsafe. A big, huge pothole at the end of your driveway is aggravating, and it actually affects your car, which is your mode of transportation. Unable to park near your house because of, you know, a lot of people from outside the city parking right at your house, and you have to search for a parking space. All those things really affect your quality of life, that you really want to have someone you can go to, turn to, who will advocate on your behalf in the city. And that's what I offer. So I want to make sure I make that personal contact with those individuals. So I am doing the old burning off the leather on the sole of my shoes, because I think it's really, really important that I make that contact. And I hope that people are home and that I get to meet them. And I also say to people, if you're not home, call me, leave me a note, and tell me when you would be around. Tell me if you'd like to, you know, get a group of your neighbors together, and I'll meet them all at once. Whatever, but I really believe I don't want us to get away from that personal contact, and that's my only concern with social media and the internet, is that you don't get that opportunity to really connect with the individual. And I hope I get to do that with everybody in Ward 2.
Great. Well, I want to thank you for being a guest on Trending Now with Josh Arnold, and wish you the very best in your community activities and in your current race for Ward 2 City Council.
Well, thank you so much, Josh, and a wonderful show, and I look forward to tuning into it.
Great. Take care now.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. If you're replacing the windows in your home, please see the Anderson 400 Series windows on display at any of our three locations in North Reading, Beverly, or Plaistow, New Hampshire. The Anderson 400 is attractive, durable, energy efficient, and reasonably priced. Remember, Anderson is the most trusted name in windows. See the Anderson 400 at any of our three locations. That's North Reading, Beverly, or Plaistow, New Hampshire, or at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
Harrington's Trophy and Awards has been rewarding the North Shore for over 25 years. Hi, I'm Kevin Harrington.
And I am Marty Harrington, and we are known for our local family business, providing custom trophies, plaques, screen printing, embroidery, and much more. We offer a variety of services such as engraving wedding gifts, medals for charity walks, youth sports trophies and uniforms. From the newest style performance wear to your everyday work shirts, we are your one-stop shop. Whether it's a fantasy football, warm-up suits for your team, end-of-the-year banquet gifts, or recognizing excellence, we pride our business on our exceptional customer service and quality products. Located in Lynn, or visit our website at harringtontrophy.com.
People come in, take a seat. You're really in for a treat at Sylvan Street. A great place to eat and drink and meet with family and friends at Sylvan Street. We treat you right, day or night. Satisfy your appetite. Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
Catch a game with friends, meet for lunch, cocktails after work, or a romantic dinner for two. Whatever your plan to do it at Sylvan Street Grill in Peabody and Salisbury. See you at Sylvan Street.
Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
NewsSports.com is known for connecting North Shore sports fans with local sports newsmakers. Features on teams and players. Exclusive video interviews following the big games. Live event coverage such as high school football, basketball, hockey, and baseball. Live video coverage of the Gloucester Fiesta. MSO also connects you to the area news leaders. Mayors, state representatives, state senators, town administrators, city and town elected officials, business leaders, and more. Entertainment features. Follow us on Twitter or Facebook at MSO News Sports. Email us at msonewsports@gmail.com. Leave a voice message anytime, 978-325-3638. Stay connected to your North Shore neighbors by simply clicking on msonewsports.com.
Welcome back to Trending Now with Josh Arnold. Our next guest is Jamie Figueroa, candidate for
Hello?
Hey, okay. Jamie Figueroa is a candidate for City Council at Large in Lynn, Massachusetts. Jamie, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Josh. Well, thank you for having me.
We usually start out and ask people to give us a 3 or 4 minute bio, and then we could get into some questions about the campaign.
All right. So, Jamie Figueroa. I am a 14-year resident of Lynn. I have two sons also. I have attended Lynn Classical High School in Lynn, as well as North Shore Community College, where I was fortunate enough to receive a scholarship to Suffolk University, where I'll be done now in December, with a degree in marketing and real estate. And in Lynn, I'm an active community participant. I'm the treasurer at Lynn Community Association. I am a former co-chair of the North Shore Young Democrats and also the former vice president of the student government at North Shore Community College, as well as have coached youth sports here in Lynn. And I continue to give back. Most recently, last year, I had the privilege of interning at Boston City Hall and the Boston Planning and Development Agency, where I learned firsthand how they work with their public property in Boston and how they disperse it and lease it and sell it if they do sell it. And that's one of the things, the most important things I want to bring here to our city in Lynn. I think we do a disservice to ourselves when we sell and continue to sell public property and public buildings. I really think it's time that we started investing in some of them. We started renovating some and creating shared workspaces, inviting startups being priced out of Boston, Cambridge, and Somerville to make home here in Lynn. We maintain the assets, we gain new commercial tax revenue, and we increase our budget, we lower costs for our residents and taxpayers, and we invest in positive things and become the technological hub we so desperately need to be in the North Shore as being the biggest city of the North Shore. Those are some of the things that we want to do here in the city, as well as really putting the Lynn community back in the driver's seat and back to the forefront of decision-making here in Lynn. I believe we have gotten a little far away from it. We need someone now, more importantly with times like this, to get in and bring our community and put us a focus as decision-making at City Hall. I also think we need to start expanding opportunities for our youth. You know, it is important that we invest in our youth preventative and positive initiatives. And as a city, we have to do better for our future leaders. And as far as development here in the downtown and how we're going and we're growing with economic development, we need to protect some of our most vulnerable participants and most vulnerable residents here in Lynn and protect our senior community as well. We need to provide more housing for them. We have 3 or 4 year waiting lists that we need to decrease, and that's happening now with the sale of the Marshall Middle School. We are building all senior low-income subsidies housing, and we need to build stronger relationships with them, and providing homes for them is a start there. We need to really start communicating as well and building better relationships with everyone in Lynn. And it's not only inviting people to City Hall, it's bringing City Hall to them, to their communities where they feel comfortable. We cannot continue always to invite people to a police station, a City Hall, those are places of authority. And if we can go to their environment, to their community, and involve ourselves in their culture, I think it'd be the start of great community conversations and a way we can involve all the community to make Lynn a better place for everyone living here. You know, and lastly, I want to be a huge advocate of fiscal responsibility in our city. We need to be a responsible steward of city finances, and we need to focus on smart economic development that creates new commercial tax revenue and jobs for the citizens here in Lynn. We continue to lose our young, talented workforce graduating from college to Boston, Somerville, and Cambridge, and we need to provide them with good jobs here in Lynn.
Great. Well, that's a very ambitious agenda, and I wish you well. I've got a few questions for you. City councils tend to be a balancing act to a strong mayor form of government, and that, you know, can create some institutional friction. Do you think that friction is helpful? Is it constructive? Excuse me. And what are your thoughts on how the current city council has worked with the current mayor, and what might change if you were elected in a few weeks?
Well, I believe there's compromise to everything. I believe if we continue to adhere by our city charter and adhere to the councilors at large, are the checks and balances to the executive branch of our government in the city, which is the mayor of Lynn. And we need to have a great working relationship if we want to move Lynn in a positive direction. You know, we have to look at the way other cities are operating, how Salem's operating, how Marblehead operates, or Swampscott operates. We need to start visiting some of these and really getting advice. We need a proactive council. We need a proactive mayor. We have great people running for mayor now, as our current incumbent in Ms. Flanagan Kennedy and Tom McGee running for mayor. Anyone who comes in needs to know how to work with any mayor coming in. And there's compromise for everything. There's a middle ground that everyone can reach, so all sides are happy and all sides are put. We're a diverse city. There's 36 languages spoken in this city. We need to come to a compromise so that every part of our population is being served adequately with the resources necessary to move forward.
What impact has social media had on candidates running for office and people who are in government reaching out to their constituencies? Is it favorable, and is it? What are your thoughts there?
Well, I think social media is still evolving, and the way it's just a new method and a new medium of communication with our residents. But I really think, on top of social media and on top of all of that, if you're not having these personal relationships at the doors with our residents and our concerned citizens, then you're not making an adequate and real connection. Everything is social media. Some can be authentic, some can be replicated, some can be duplicated, and a lot is plagiarized. We need to be, that's why debates are so important, forums are important, and really getting out to the community. Social media is just an aspect and a new way of communicating with constituents and residents. But the door knocking and the phone calling is still the best way to communicate with our city.
Great. The marijuana, the referendum that changed the state law allowing recreational use of marijuana has created some logistical issues for cities and towns across the Commonwealth, like zoning, permitting, enforcement. What is your take on that, and what do you see the issues, the impact issues for Lynn?
Well, again, it's all about finding the middle ground, is getting all groups together, the naysayers, the yaysayers, getting them into a room and starting the conversation on how we can properly address this. At the end of the day, government isn't going to solve all of our problems, but we can be the bridge and the messenger that communicates both parties and really come to a middle ground on how we can adequately serve Lynn. It's here. The state is forcing it on us. So how can we adapt so that we create a safe environment for the marijuana suppliers and for the marijuana users, as well as the law, the citizens in Lynn who kind of feel a different way about it? It's all education and communication. Let's start the conversation so we can work towards it.
Great. We have a few minutes left, but what do you think are, and you covered some of this in your opening statement, but I'll take another run at, what are the most significant issues before the city of Lynn in this election? What would you say are going to be, if you were, you know, Nostradamus of Lynn and looking forward to, what is the agenda going to look like for the next 2 years for city council, mayor, and so forth? You know, what's that going to look like?
Well, Josh, I think the first and foremost thing we need to address is the lack of funding for public safety and our mismanagement of city finances. We cannot blame this on one administration or on two administrations. This is years of mismanagement and property monies and public monies. So we need to really sit down, whether it's we provide an internal audit of every city department agency's budget, and we work towards addressing and funding what's needed and not what's wanted, and really put an emphasis on public safety and education. Right now, at any given moment, we have 6 cruisers on the road and 12 cop cars. In a city of 100,000 people, that is unacceptable. We have a department with 160 officers or less, and we're compared to Cambridge. They have a police force of 220 officers, and it's a city almost the same population. We need to be there, and we need to address this budget to get it there, and we really need to be and really put Lynn first when addressing this budget. It's not always about this program and that program. It's about funding the basic fundamentals in the city that keeps the city moving, that helps people wake up every day, that helps people live their life in the city. That's what we need to be addressing.
Great. Well, I want to thank you. Go ahead. No, go ahead.
I'm sorry. And it's not going to happen overnight, but these next 2 years and this new council and mayor can lay the foundation and the platform for a better, progressive Lynn and a bright future for everyone in this city.
Great. I want to thank you. I'm very impressed with your responses.
Thank you, Josh.
And I wish you the very best. I want to thank you for being a guest on Trending Now with Josh Arnold, and good luck in your campaign in the final 5 or 6 weeks. Take care,
Jamie.
Thank you.
Got a question. Would there be a podcast or something available on this?
This show is broadcast live and is available on demand at MSO Radio, and I'll send you the link when I get out of the show.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Josh. It was a pleasure being on, and look forward to more appearances on the future as a council at large in Lynn.
Thank you. Take care now.
Thank you. You as well.
The Gloucester House Restaurant at historic Seven Seas Wharf, 63 Rogers Street, Gloucester. This is owner Lenny Linquata.
We provide service and product better than anybody else. It comes directly from our boats right to your plate. We have fishermen that work great for us. We are wholesalers that we buy what we want to serve to our customers, and we put the rest of it right out in the market.
The Gloucester House Restaurant. Visit thegloucesterhouse.com.
This is the freshest seafood you can get from our boats to your plate.
The Institution for Savings has always believed in giving back to our communities because our communities are such great places to live and work. Last year alone, we donated and pledged more than $3.9 million to local nonprofits, including local hospitals, schools, food pantries, art organizations, and more. Named one of Boston Business Journal's top philanthropic companies, we are proud to be your local hometown bank. InstitutionForSavings.com. Member FDIC, DIF, Equal Housing Lender.
Many aspects of estate planning are interrelated, and you can turn to attorney Bob Madruga for Full Service Estate Planning to help you develop a comprehensive plan in providing for your future. Bob will work with you through the years to adapt your plan as needed, and he can assist you with managing wills, trust, probate, and taxes. Visit the law offices of Robert J. Madruga at 128 Main Street, Gloucester, or call today for an appointment at 978-283-6883.
Welcome back to Trending Now with Josh Arnold. Our first guest is Bill Squillis. Bill, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Josh.
Well, Bill, you've been a member of the Dick Silver administration. You were a candidate for state senator years ago. You were mayor of Gloucester, assistant state treasurer, and you were the director of finance in Newburyport, and have enjoyed a very and you spent many years as a public administrator in Virginia, so you come on our show with a realm of diverse experience in public administration and government, and I'm hoping you can enlighten our listeners about some of what's going on in America today and in the races, not just locally, but what's happening on the national front.
Well, that's a lot of that's quite a bit, Josh. But I'll tell you the truth, it is kind of interesting. As a former public administrator and public official, elected official, it's interesting to see what's going on today. Certainly, the topic of everyone seems to be Donald Trump and what's happening in Washington. And of course, our concern as a former local official, and I would imagine for a lot of local officials, is how is that going to affect us? And I think depends on where you're sitting, but if you're a mayor of a city, and if you particularly care about the nuts and bolts of running government, then you want to make sure that the federal government is there to help you when in need. And I think whether you're a Democrat or Republican, you have to give the Trump administration high marks, because they were right there in Texas, in Florida, when the hurricanes hit, and I think it demonstrated that, you know, we're not alone. And even though we may be hundreds of miles away from the center of Washington, we still have a government that works for us, and that in times of real need, and with all the pundits aside, and with all of the criticisms, and all of the various ideological positions, when all is said and done, we have a government that is for us. And I think as a local official, it's nice to know that if something happens locally, that the federal government isn't just going to sit on their hands and let us fend for ourselves. They're going to be there with all of their might to try and help us. So I think that's reassuring to know. Secondly, I think there's many different issues that are coming down the road that, you know, as a local official, we really don't have to deal with when you're dealing with the federal government, like, for example, health care. Health care has always been a nationally run a program through Medicare. And so now we're viewing actions in Washington which seem to indicate that the federal government wants to give up a little more control of things like health care and place it back to the states. And as a former state official, working in the Joe Malone administration and Bill Weld, it really, I think, in many ways serves us better, because if we have more control over the funds that are given us, and they're not just spent in Washington by some bureaucrats who have good intentions, but may not know the specific needs of our particular communities and states, then it may be a good move. And whether you agree with the new healthcare proposals and trying to appeal Obamacare, as they say, obviously it's going to include many many positive things that Obama had in that legislation. I know myself, having a daughter who was under the age of 26 and out of college, it was a great help to me and my wife to be able to keep her on our health plans.
Yeah.
And so there are a lot of good things that hopefully will be kept, but the things that are making the price and the expense of Obamacare go up will be changed, and by giving it back to the states through talking about a block grant program, very similar to what they have done in the past with housing and various categories of people in need. That block grant will be used together with state funds to address our health needs. So even though it's not a direct city and town issue, it's certainly an issue that's going to affect us locally. And so there's a lot of exciting things happening in Washington aside from all of the, you might call it a circus in many ways, but it's a very interesting circus. And if you're a student of politics, or if you're a political junkie like I am, and you like to watch and listen to politics, you know, I kind of feel like I'm the old fire horse who's in the barn, and every time I hear some political activity going on or somebody talking politics, my ears pop up and I get ready to go out. Unfortunately, now that I'm retired and have been for the last 3 years and approaching the age of 70, I'd like to get out there and charge and put out the fire. But unfortunately, Josh, it's been reduced to a call from you, by you, and trying to share with you some of my thoughts about what's happening in politics, both locally and nationally.
Well, you mentioned the block grant and health care, and really that's not a new concept. It's not, and it's something that's been with us really. I mean, the underlying issues there are the ones that the founding fathers wrestled with more than 200 years ago, and that was, is government to be something of a larger federal government that is involved in more a lot of different things, or is the real role of government a states' rights issue, and it's something that's to be left to the states? If you look at the transition from the New Frontier, the Great Society, into the Nixon era, the plan in the Great Society in pre-Great Society era was to have strong categorical grants, but they were aiming them at constituencies that were largely of the Democratic Party. So the funds that were going to find their way to cities and towns were going to go essentially to places where there were more Democrats than Republicans and so forth. That it was a political connection to the money, not that there isn't always. And Nixon's approach with the block grant was that states' rights theme of, hey, just as you said, how do we know what's best for Gloucester? You know, well, we're that far away. Why don't we give the money to Massachusetts and let them figure out what Gloucester needs, and Essex needs, and Melrose needs, and so forth. And that's where that was born, and it, for a period of time, worked. So, I mean, there's that ebb and flow of ideology that underlies, you know, how policy is enacted and so forth. But, the healthcare is just an extension of that. I did want to touch on one thing and about...
Well, can I just want to... You brought up a very interesting point, Josh, and I think with this healthcare proposal that is coming up, one of the concerns is to make sure that the money gets, even though it's going to be a state run, we don't know all the details on how this program is going to work, but one of the important things is to make sure it gets to the people who really need it and that it's administered fairly. You know, one of the, and you mentioned a word, and I think this word really was really the in summary, was what this last election was all about, and that is that Trump seemed to appeal to a larger group of Americans who have been hardworking, go to work every day, send their kids to school, play baseball and soccer moms, and all the middle America and the hardworking America that in many cases are not a member of a special interest group.
Yeah.
And if this healthcare program is targeted towards special groups, then it's going to be a shame, because that is the reason, I think, at least in my opinion, that Trump got elected. And that is because the Democrats have always focused on special interest groups, and not that they are not worthy, but they have focused on these not only special interests, but very active special interest groups that are politically active, that are activists, quote unquote. And these activists have been dealt a terrible blow. And so Trump now seeming to appeal to middle America, the America that is not a minority, that is not a color, black, white, green, yellow, brown, but is no color. It's just America. And those people came out and they said, gee, you know what? Here's somebody who's representing us. You know, we're not picketing. We're not marching. We're not a vocal a special interest group. We're just Americans trying to do our work, trying to, you know, get government out of our way. And he touched a very sensitive note with them. And so if this program, if healthcare is geared towards special interest groups and that do not include mainstream America, then it's going to be a program that's going to fail, because this is really what I think this past election was all about. And so let's see what happens. Hopefully it will be a great improvement over Obamacare, but time is still early.
Let me ask you, shifting just slightly, you know, when you and I were growing up and we weren't that far apart in age, in Gloucester, we didn't have a strong mayor form of government. We had a city manager form of government, and the mayor was usually the person who topped the ticket from among the city councilors, whether they had five or seven people, and there was more of a ceremonial mayor. But in those days, you'd have 35 people running for city council to get seven seats, and we remember the Ed Flynn. You know, when everyone would go to Kelleher's to they'd have the big board, the chalkboard up with the, you know, like a race, a horse race, and laying odds on who was going to win, and they had labeled Ed Flynn the dark horse candidate, and he went out and got himself a black horse and rode it up the stairs into the bar, and forever became part of the political lore of Gloucester. You remember that, and you remember all the people who ran for office, but we don't see that now. You look across and it's not just Gloucester. You look across the cities and towns, and there doesn't seem to be a lot of challenges out there vying for positions. Now, you could say, on the one hand, well, everybody's doing a good job, and no one wants to do that, but I don't know if that's necessarily the case. What needs to be done to reinvigorate? I mean, you and I were born of the generation, were in the generation when Kennedy made his call to public service, and our careers, to some extent, responded to that. I'm wondering if that's faded into the background, and people aren't interested in public service anymore. What can be done to fix that?
Well, you know, I tell you, Josh, it's an excellent question, and it's a point that I think, particularly in this last election cycle, is even more meaningful. And that is, are we going to get good people to run for public office? And why aren't there more good people out there who are willing to throw their hat in the ring and serve in a public capacity as a selectman, as a city councilor, as a mayor, state representative? It's a shame to see that there's a lack of interest out there. And I think one of the main reasons for that, and I kind of hate to use, some of the language of the current campaign, the national campaign, but the press has been in many ways unfair to politicians, and they have tried to create, in my opinion, they've tried to create an environment where, hey, listen. Don't tell us all the good things that you're doing for your city, your town, or your state, or your country. We want to hear the bad things. And you know, it was interesting. I remember when I was mayor, and there was a couple of reporters covering City Hall, and I took one aside, and I asked them. I said, "Gee, I said, you know, why is it that when we build a new youth center and we have a wonderful new committee to try and have youth activities in the city that there's really very little publicity, nothing really in the press. Why is it that, you know, the good things are never mentioned? And why aren't people who are doing good things in the community saying, gee, you know, Josh Arnold just got elected president of the Rotary? You know, you don't see things like that anymore. You know, maybe you do a little piece here and there, but it's really something that's not emphasized. And you know what the reporter said to me? The reporter said to me, Bill, how many airplanes do you think take off and land in the United States every day? I had no idea. So I threw out some figure, you know, 10,000. He goes, that's correct. He says, how many people would read a newspaper if we had a headline, 10,000 airplanes landed and took off in America today safely? How many people do you think would read that newspaper? We only are going to put in the newspaper those planes that crash.
Yeah.
That's going to be the headlines. So I said to him, and as a, I remember in my graduate program, public administration, I had a similar conversation with a professor, and I asked the reporter the same question. Well, why are you trying to shoot it down?
Yeah.
Why are you trying to shoot the plane down? This is a country that needs planes to fly, needs people who are out there serving, and that are not in jeopardy or in fear that if they throw their hat in the ring, they're going to get crucified.
Yeah.
You know, most of what they say in newspaper, I know myself personally. I remember when I ran for the state senate, the reporter asked me, who are you going to, this was when Reagan was running, who are you going to support? I was running as a Democrat, you know, and who are you going to support? Are you going to support Reagan or, oh gosh, I don't know who was running at the time. I forget who he was running against. But the bottom line was, I said, well, gee, you know, I look at the candidate more than anything. I said, even though I'm a Democrat, I said, I keep an open mind. You know what the headline was in the next, not one paper, but this was all through Essex County. There was the Essex County newspapers, and in Ipswich they had these small papers that went to every little town. The headline was, Democratic candidate Squillis supports Reagan. I opened it up. This was like a week before the election. I opened up the paper. Look, headline. Squillis supports Reagan. I called the newspaper editor. I was so livid. I found out that the reporter's son was on the hockey team coached by my opponent, and that she was in the same business that he was in, my opponent was in, and had given several hundreds of dollars to his campaign.
Yeah.
So, you know, when I hear Trump say things like what he does about the press and working at the state house for 8 years, and listening to what goes on, you know, he really does speak his mind. He shoots from the hip. A lot of what he says is not the way that I would say it, and I don't think a lot of people in public service would say it. They could probably say the same thing and do it in a much more dignified manner. But the bottom line is that he has hit a nerve, and he is talking his mind, and he is doing what he thinks is right. I think he's either going to be the greatest president this country has ever known, or he's going to be the worst president. I don't think there's going to be any in between.
And I think no matter what happens, it will be seen in those terms too. The people who are his detractors will think he is, you know, worse than Andrew Johnson, worse than Herbert Hoover, worse than, you know, who was the one before Hoover? The doesn't matter. Teapot Dome is what I'm thinking of. But the what is the you know? And the people like him are going to you know, think that long after he's gone.
Right.
The thing that I've noticed. It's going to be somewhat criticism on both levels, but you know, growing up in a family that was active in at least behind the scenes in political campaigns, one of the truisms of the era was there were two institutions you don't mess with. One is law enforcement, and the other is the Fourth Estate. And you play the tape back, if the incumbent president had been a little more friendly to the press, I have to think that his standing in the polls and his standing in the public would be different today than it was. I won't mention anyone's names. You and I are familiar with people who worked in the public sector, who walked in and it was like going into a zoo and taking a stick and rattling every cage as they went down the aisle and back. And everyone's looking and hoping the cages are open, that by the time the person gets around the end of the U, someone's going to come out and eat them. You know, there's that kind of thing, and I'm wondering if he would have taken a different tact, if things would be a little smoother for him right now, on the one hand. On the other hand, I'm recognizing that he has built corporate billion-dollar empires by challenging the he's not from the establishment. He challenges. So part of his psyche, if you will, is that I'm going to show you. And so that the media has not treated him well, he's going to beat them. He's going to show them that his way is better. And I think that defiance has, I don't want to say crippled, but has limited his ability to succeed as the current president. What are your thoughts?
Well, you know, it's an excellent point, Josh. And you know, I was actually down in Florida during the primaries, the presidential primaries, and I had an opportunity to listen to quite a bit of what was going on the Republican side. And because it was Hillary was going to get in, I was all for Hillary, and it was kind of a, you know, Bernie was an interesting phenomenon, but the bottom line was Hillary was really going to be the nominee. So it was going to be interesting to see on the Republican side who was going to be the nominee. And you know, I had heard of Donald Trump, and of course he's a billionaire in New York, and you know, celebrity, and I never really watched The Apprentice, but he was, you know, he was on TV, and so, you know, he had his own identity. And I listened to him, and I said, "You got to be kidding me! This guy's running for president, and he's insulting every single major, not only every single candidate that he from his own party, but he is insulting their families, the Bush family. You go down the line." And I said, "This is amazing.
Yeah.
This is really good theater. I want to watch this." So I kept watching and listening. And it was actually quite humorous. And I said to myself, well, he's never going to get elected. I remember, you probably remember poor old Nick Mavulis.
Yeah.
Who unfortunately went astray and went to jail. But I knew Nick when I was...
I worked for Nick.
Yeah, I know you did. And Nick told me, he said, "Bill," it's when I first got into the mayor's office in Gloucester, and he said, "Bill," he said, "you know, I'll tell you one thing." He says, "Never get into a fight with the press. They buy ink by the barrel, and they buy paper by the rolls. So stay away from the press, make them their friend, and don't do anything to upset them." I said, "Thank you, Nick. Good advice." He also said, "Make sure if you're in a party and you're drinking anything, make sure it's water." I said, "Okay, Nick, very good. Two good pieces of advice." But the point here is that when you're dealing with people, you know, there's a certain, what you said is absolutely true, but there's another side to it. And that is Trump, people were listening. People saying, "This is different. This is a guy who's not from Washington. This is a guy who has been very successful in his life, and he has made a fortune developing real estate. He seems to be a good father. He's had a little trouble with his marriages, but that's, you know, that happens. But he seems to be different, and he seems to be someone who really is taking a different approach to politics. You know, you know, this polling can be done, and they say, well, what do you think of Congress? And people say, oh, I think Congress is terrible. They don't do anything. They're do-nothing folks. And then, what do you think of your congressman? Oh, I love him. I love him or her. I love him,
but they don't know anything.
Yeah,
listen, we got to go. When you talk about the people that voted for Trump, you know, one of the things that I thought he tapped into was, you remember there was a movie, I think, in the 70s where the guy's leaning out the apartment window and he's yelling, "I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore."
There you go. Right.
Those were the people that responded, I thought, to Trump. And I'm not saying those are only the people that Trump, but he got those people
right to
listen, and he got them to vote. And I think a lot of the times those people have stayed home.
Right, exactly. And he hit the constituent groups. You know, as I said earlier about the Democrats have kind of aligned themselves with the special interest groups based on religion, based on your politics, based on your ethnic background, based on your color. They've kind of aligned themselves with people who are very active, the activists in the world. And Trump, he appealed to a lot of the special interest groups that had a broad base, veterans. And as a result, I mean, there's veterans everywhere. They're every race, every nationality. So as a result, he really appealed to middle America, middle-class America, working-class America, you know, and if you want to say white America, I think some of the Democrats will say that. I think it's not necessarily true. He got more Latino votes than Romney did, and beat Hillary in many of the states where the black vote was substantial for Trump. So I think, you know, there was a reason out there that, yes, it's hurt Trump politically, I think, with the mainstreamers who said, gee, this guy, you know, he's calling people funny names, and he doesn't care what he says, and he seems to be...
He didn't come across as presidential in the race, and that was...
But if he wasn't an egomaniac, and, you know, Josh, you've been around politics a long time, and yeah. I've been like over 45 years. If you don't have an ego, politics is not the arena that you want to get into.
Yeah.
And because you better, you know, you really, really need to look at another profession. The bigger the ego, as long as it's well directed.
Yeah.
If you don't think you can get out there, and if you're not confident in yourself, then you're in trouble. And I think Trump, I think as you see him work with world leaders and you see him work with other individuals, he's very confident. And some people see arrogant. But you know,
sometimes there's a
in that position, you have to be somewhat that way. If you're not,
they'll walk over you.
Do a good job. You're gonna say, "Oh, wait a minute, I'm scared of what the group is gonna say if I do it." I remember when I was up at the State House, politicians would wait after they saw a newspaper headline that might be critical of them, and they could talk to their consultants to see what they should say.
Yeah.
How should they respond so that I don't upset people? What's the spin? You know, the spin doctors. What, and they pay thousands and hundreds of thousands of dollars to these geniuses who are supposed to tell them what to say and how to say it so they don't offend anybody. Well, that's baloney.
Yeah.
And Trump, he's got his Twitter.
Yeah.
He's speaking directly with the people. Now, whether it's, I don't think it's being screened, because he's saying some things that certainly should not be said.
Yeah.
If you're the president, at least you wouldn't think a president would be saying that.
Yeah.
But he's saying it. So as I said earlier, and in answer to this question that you asked me, either he's going to be, I think, the greatest president, or he's going to be the worst president. But I don't think you're going to see a change, and the real proof of the pudding is going to be in the results.
Okay.
If the economy responds, if he gets the infrastructure built, if he gets this healthcare system that works, he also has a Supreme Court appointment which looks to be favorable. Conservative, if you're on the conservative side, a good move. And if he does positive things, he could turn out to be not only the most different president we've ever had in the world, he could be the best president.
Okay.
And again, he could be the worst.
So, wrapping up, we got to go. I want to thank you for being a guest on Trending Now with Josh Arnold. Always fun to talk politics and get your perspective, given the diverse experience you've had at many levels of government. I would tell you it was Walter Mondale that ran against Reagan, and I voted Reagan. The guy next to me is not going to believe that, but it's true.
You're a Democrat.
Yeah, yeah. All right.
Well,
thanks, Bill.
I was a Democrat.
Take care. Yep. Bye-bye.
Well, what Mr. Squillis said, either the the best or the worst.
Yeah, I know where...
My fear is that he'll be the last.
The last, yeah.
And that's a great fear of mine. And I will point out to you also, the man who was shouting out the window, I'm mad as hell and not going to take it anymore, was the media. That was, I believe it was Peter Finch
Peter Finch.
Network.
Network, that's it, yeah.
So he was ranting and raving against them.
Yeah.
All right, Josh, ideas for coming shows?
We have, let's see, we've got Julie Flowers, who's a candidate for City Council in Beverly next week. Amanda Campbell, who is a candidate for School Committee in Salem next week. And Robin Organ, who is founder and executive director of Project Green Schools.
All righty then, that's Josh Arnold, our producer and engineer Bill Proposky. I'm Rick Moore. Football tonight on MSO and all weekend long. Check out our website.